Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, most interactive sports talk show in Houston. We did get a text, as Spencer instructed to you. That's how you can communicate with the show. You guys might consider talking about sports every once in a while. We're talking about horns down. It's an epidemic in sports these days.
Yeah. But what's more sports than that? This is what happened in a college basketball game last night.
Right. We're so sports that we didn't spend the whole show talking about Texans, Ravens on Saturday. Post game show. What? Post game show, Sean. Right here, ESPN 97.5.
Watch out, Michael Connor.
I'm making a big announcement on that show.
Yeah, the Twitch numbers go crazy.
What if that was someone does an on air bet? If the Texans lose to the Ravens, I will come out of the closet. Finally. Just like you all want it. Would people tune in for that? I don't know. We're just trying to get numbers here.
That sounds like
the underdog radio station.
That sounds like the type of bet that Josh Beard would like force himself to make.
Yeah,
you know how he like talks himself into making bets that no one forces on him.
Right. He's like, it was his own version of self-flagellation.
If the Texans don't cover, I'll open mouth kiss Paul Gallant. It's like no one asked for this. What are we doing?
I definitely didn't ask for this. He's not my type. Anyway, there's been a lot of talk this week about the difference between week one and week divisional round of the playoffs when it comes to the Texans and the Ravens. And I'm not going to lie, I'm getting annoyed by it. It's not quite as annoying as the Bengals and Chiefs talking about the disrespect the other organization has shown them, like last year's playoffs. But I'm already tired of this narrative. And I hate the word narrative. I really do. But it's been brought up so much and there's been so many questions asked about it. I can't get around it. DeMeco Ryans has said multiple times this week in press conferences that the Texans are a completely different team than they were in week one. CJ Stroud said the same thing. Hell, we even heard from Bobby Slowick, the Texans offensive coordinator, that he's changed dramatically as a coordinator since that moment in time.
Circling back to week one, we kind of used it a little bit on offense as a little bit of a rallying cry. Like, we couldn't get out of our own way in that game. We couldn't even really get the ball down and set to snap it to even feel like we played, you know. And that starts with me, and it starts with coaches. And we kind of changed what we did from after that point on. I think we evolved as an offensive unit and as a group from that point on. But then in between getting in our own way there, you know, CJ, when the ball was snapped and we were able to be where we needed to be and kind of I got out of the way, CJ did some special stuff in that game that you don't always see a rookie quarterback do in his first game out there on the road, you know, when you have to deal with crowd noise and good players on the other side and all everything that's going on. Yeah, I mean, he was awesome once we were able to get into a rhythm. But that game, we didn't get into a rhythm. And then from there, you know, that it was unfortunate at the time, but it really set the table for what we became as the year went, and we grew a lot from there. So it was awesome to see the glimpses, and then now they've just become significantly more consistent.
So that's Bobby Slowick, offensive coordinator. TLDL, we're different. But you know what? The Ravens also think they're different. We've grown too. Lamar Jackson asked about the growth that the Ravens have gone through this season, the growing pains.
Talked about how much Houston has changed since week one. I see that your team has changed since that first game in September.
We changed a lot as well, just getting better and better, you know, with our scheme. And just being one unit, you know, we had a bunch of new pieces as well on offense, but we definitely getting in sync now.
So that's Lamar Jackson talking about growth, about change, about coming of age or whatever the hell. And now here's Roquan Smith, the Ravens linebacker, doing the same thing.
think they're definitely have improved, but hey, so have we when you look at it. And yeah, they do a lot of good things. 26 is running the ball well. 7, he's very accurate. And then 12, the receiver, he's definitely coming on. So the offense is definitely clicking, but hey, we wouldn't want it any other way. So we're prepared for it, and we're ready to go to war, regardless of who it's against. And they're the team that's coming in here. So business is business handled.
Never heard that saying before. Also, I would push back Roquan Smith on football being war. How dare you insult our veterans? Thank you for your service like that. But the disrespect as well to not even say Devin Singletary, C.J. Stroud, Nico Collins. I think that's some more bulletin board material for the Houston Texans. But yeah, guess what, guys? Teams change a lot from week one to the second round of the playoffs. And generally, teams improve if they make it all the way from week one to the second round of the playoffs as the season goes along, right? Like, has any team gotten worse that makes it to this part of the season?
I was going to say the Miami Dolphins.
Week one is different. The Eagles, same thing. But when we're in this round, especially now that there's only two teams who get bye weeks, it just doesn't happen that way anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say there's some Peyton Manning Colts teams that are probably better in week one than they were now.
Yeah, but they might have just run into the wrong team at the wrong time going up against those New England Patriots teams. Because
I was thinking of the San Diego Chargers.
That's true.
And the New York Jets.
They weirdly could not beat the San Diego Chargers. But yeah, to that point, they used to have like these great second round of the playoffs or first round of the playoffs. It was always against Kansas City. They would set Kansas City on fire, essentially. And then the next game they would play somebody like San Diego or the Patriots. But to bring it back, yeah. Everyone improves over the course of a season. What are we doing here? We're having like my Schmenzer grew more than your Schmenzer off. Cool. You're both growers and you're showers. Great. Awesome.
I think the Ravens are a little bit more of showers.
Definitely they're more showers. The Texans, I guess, are more growers. But it's crazy. This is now what has, I guess, seeped into the fan base discourse, like Texans versus Ravens fan conversation. I saw some Ravens fan tweet out, "This isn't the same CJ Stroud in Texans from week one." He's like, "Well, yeah, Ravens starters didn't play in the preseason. It was week one of a brand new system. Lamar was extremely rusty. No Kyle Van Noy. First game for Odell Beckham Jr. in over a year. Likely wasn't a focal point yet. This ain't the same week one Ravens." And there's a black and white photo of Lamar Jackson walking out of a tunnel and an emoji with someone like putting a finger in front of their mouth. Like, can we shut up? Let's reenact that and just stop talking about the team's growth and change since week one. The week one game barely matters. I said it earlier in the week. That game does not effing matter.
Yeah, it very much feels like the lazy narrative of both, because both fan bases can just be like, well, you know, it's week one. Like,
yes!
The Texans can be like, yeah, you know why we'll win? Because it was close at halftime in week one. And now look how much better we are. Now we can win. And Ravens fans can do the same thing. I mean, some of those bullet points, I could tell it's the classic, I need to make five good points. I need to make 5 points, but I only have like two good ones. I'm just going to say Odell Beckham likely wasn't a focal point of the offense. It's like, okay, sure. This is just such a...
This is a straight-to-TV package.
Yes.
They were different in week one, but now it's the divisional round.
Is this going to be on ESPN? This is going to be on ESPN.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, so that'll
definitely be... Get a Tom Rinaldi version of this? Oh, wait, he's on Fox now.
That'll definitely be the first drive for one of the teams. They'll go to the graphics package that's like, and remember, these teams met in week one, and it's been a long road for both of them. And it's like a cowboy walking through a saloon or something. Like, whatever stupid graphic that they put up there.
You know what, though? But give Joe Buck and Troy Aikman some credit. At least they will do it and execute it in a
They'll mention it in the first quarter, and that's it.
Yeah.
And maybe if the Texans like win in a blowout, they'll be like, oh, wow, that week one game, this is a different Texans team, and that's it. But if the Ravens win, they probably won't.
No, they definitely won't.
Or if it's close, they won't mention it.
You're right. 100%. They'll be like, oh, okay. It's all about Lamar Jackson. So we'll see, but I'm tired of this one already. I truly am. Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in. You can join on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN 97.5. From the 832, part of it comes from the fans that say the Ravens already stomped the Texans when it was week one, and they have no chance this week. I don't think there are that many people doing it, though. I think most people have acknowledged how good C.J. Stroud is. And I don't think that there is an alarming amount of disrespect coming out of Baltimore, who I do think is a city that generally knows football, because the Ravens have been good for such a long period of time. Like, I don't think that's been coming out of the city. I don't think it's supreme confidence and arrogance. Lamar Jackson's 1-3 in playoff games. Like, that is definitely in the back of their mind. So there is some respect. Okay, let's stop the who's James Moore. I'm done. Paul Galancho, up next. What is the worst entity in sports media? Because one of them has gotten in a back and forth with one of Houston's favorite sons. First, though, I got to tell you about my friends at Pendleton Whiskey. Every single time I see a story about how things have changed for these two teams going into the second matchup, I think about the glass of Pendleton Whiskey waiting for me when I get home later today. Guys, Pendleton Whiskey is a whiskey that is part of what defines a cowboy. What defines a cowboy? Well, there's a lot of things that define a cowboy, but how about this? Living boldly, never losing sight of the values you believe in, tasting the moment wherever we may be. Pendleton Whiskey is barrel-aged in American oak, cut with glacier-fed spring water from Oregon's Mount Hood for an uncommonly smooth, and it is smooth, rich taste and complex flavor. I love it. Not too sweet. Goes down very smooth. Two fingers, one rock. It's fantastic. Pendleton Whiskey. It's true Western tradition. And of course, the official whiskey of the PBR Tour, which is coming to town at Toyota Center January 26th and 27th. You can visit PBR.com for tickets to go see the world's premier bull riding organization. It's Pendleton Whiskey. It's true Western tradition.
ESPN 97.5.com. Fighter of the Night Man.
I miss you, Night Man, so bad.
Back to the Paul Gallant Show, coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
PFF sucks. Have a great day, everybody.
Wow! That's J.J. Watt on the Pat McAfee Show yesterday. For those who don't know, there's been some controversy about a website called Pro Football Focus, specifically with how they graded C.J. Stroud's performance against the Cleveland Browns compared with how they graded Jordan Love's performance against the Dallas Cowboys. They gave Love a 92 on an 100-point scale. They gave C.J. Stroud a 77. Their statistics, pretty similar in this game. Blowouts for both the Texans and the Green Bay Packers. I'm going to give my take on Pro Football Focus really quickly. I think there is a use for Pro Football Focus. At the same time, it is a website that uses individual graders to watch football games. Guys who are generally qualified. We're talking about ex-players at some level, ex-coaches at some level. There is qualifications behind the guys that are doing the grades. But at the same time, if we're talking about grades, they are subjective. And these grades are based on expected outcomes more than they're based on knowing the specific play call on a snap-to-snap basis. And I think where it gets really fuzzy when it comes to Pro Football Focus is with offensive linemen, defensive linemen, and I guess linebackers too. Because it always feels like Bobby Wagner is close to the top of the NFL there. And I don't think Bobby Wagner's been an elite linebacker since probably 2019. He was second team All-Pro this year or something. What are we doing here? So there's use for it, but you are at the ultimate, at the end of the day, you are subject to the guys who are actually grading these tests. And it just by default, not every single person that's working for Pro Football Focus, which does have a fairly high degree of turnover, not everyone working at Pro Football Focus is good at grading, is good at watching tape. And when you don't know what the hell is going on a given play, then what the hell do you actually know? So there's been a lot of pushback to Pro Football Focus in the last couple of days. I got to say, the people that run the site are smarmy nerds, and they come off like that. They're condescending, and they talk down to people. How's that working for the left these days, you know? Like, it's one of those things where when you operate with this mindset that you're smarter than everybody and you have all the answers, people are going to pounce on you whenever they can. And it's one of the reasons that while I think Pro Football Focus is a useful tool, I think a lot of the people that work there come across as douches. And I would specifically point to the top of the food chain, Sam Monson and Steve Palazzolo. So J.J. Watt on the Pat McAfee show basically went on a couple of unprompted rants about Pro Football Focus. Here's the first part of it. I'm not going to lie. I love this side of J.J. Watt. I didn't know we could get J.J. Watt worked up like this. This isn't Red Ryder BB gun roasting Andy Dalton after beating him in a primetime football game, J.J. Watt. This is actually emotional and passionate while wearing a Pablo Sanchez from Backyard Baseball t-shirt, J.J. Watt.
PFF rates the best players as the best players. Well, then why would anybody subscribe to that? They literally have to be different than other people for people to be like, oh yeah, they do know something that we don't know. Like, it's bullshit, man. There's a lot of there's a lot of what ifs that happen with PFF. They're like, it's all like projected and probabilities and pass rush win percentage ratios. Well, if you win a lot of pass rushes, you're probably going to get a lot of sacks. That's generally how it goes. If you're winning a lot of pass rushes and not getting sacks, something's probably wrong. Like, I was like, it's like, if you're throwing a ball that's an interception worthy ball, but it wasn't intercepted, well, how worthy was it? I don't know. Like, I mean, this shit is dumb, man.
I love hearing JJ cuss. Hell yeah. And he's right. A lot of the grading is, and they can explain it all they want. And look, I'm not saying what they do is useless or like they're doing this in bad faith, but sometimes weird stuff happens on a football field, and to grade something different because they expect something else to happen, can you really, truly do that? Because that's extremely subjective. It's like you live in an alternate universe, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, I do. But yes, I will say, though, like with like interceptable passes, like that like everyone's sat on their couch and been like, man, we've gotten so lucky we have not thrown an interception.
True. 'Cause
we've had three of the last four passes have hit the defender's hands. Like that, like I get that it is very subjective, but there is like some value in like, hey, this guy puts the ball at risk. For whatever reason, the defense hasn't caught it yet, but he is bound to have some of these go the other way. Like I agree on whole that it is like, it is a very subjective thing. It's what people sitting at their couch think you should do or whatever. Like, oh, wide receiver should have caught that one. That's not on the quarterback. And so I get the desire from PFF to try to like answer for that or to try to like take into account that. But also sometimes you're going to get wonky ass grades when you do that.
I think the tricky thing, if you're talking about expected though, Sean, is you also have to factor in what would have happened after the wonky thing, for good or for bad, not just for bad. And to specifically point to what Pro Football Focus is highlighting for the reasoning of giving Stroud the grade that they did, they think the Brevin Jordan touchdown catch and run is more something to hold against Stroud because Brevin Jordan did most of the work. And I guess this was the big thing that affected that grade versus the grade of Jordan Love, even though, you know, what the play where Jordan Love found that Packer tight end wide open by a million yards. Like that did happen.
Yeah, I get. It is weird that it's a knock. You know, like if that was just a like we're just treating that as it was a 12-yard or 15-yard pass or 20-yard pass instead of a 75-yard run because what the hell were the Browns defenders doing?
We don't know. Like, we brought that up.
Monday we were like, I don't know what the hell the Browns are doing on that play.
So I agree with them. To a point here, here they are responding to J.J. Watt on their own Pro Football Focus show.
That Brevin Jordan play, that should have gained about 12 yards. If you look at the play, number one, it's completely uncovered. The Browns drop coverage on it entirely. It's not the kind of play where the quarterback's throw location determines yards after the catch. Actually, he made Brevin Jordan, he didn't make it. Jordan turned around to catch it facing Stroud and then had to turn back around, run down the field. And then two different Browns defenders are converging on him on the sideline, about to push him out for about a 12-yard gain, right? Instead, he just cuts back inside those two guys and then runs another 65 yards into the end zone for a touchdown. Like, that is a massive swing in this play, right? For something that was completely nothing to do with C.J. Stroud, essentially. But from that point on, you know, this is why the nerds use those expected models. The expected yardage on that play would have been like 12, right? And then Brevin Jordan makes
that
cut.
Okay, shut up, nerd. I've had enough of this guy who's hiding his Irish accent. Like, be you, you know. We Irish people, we don't have to. We're not redheaded stepchildren anymore. We don't have to hide in the shadows.
It's not 12 anymore, right?
Exactly, Sean. So, first off, like, bring the original accent back. And second, like, okay, yeah, nerd. I mean, I stopped listening after a while because you got too technical. I'm kidding. Look, he's right, but to a point. So if C.J. Stroud doesn't have that 12-yard catch and run turn into a 76-yard touchdown, who are we to say that Stroud wouldn't have just marched down the field and continued to find wide receivers and darted to them? And this is the interesting thing about Stroud's performance on Saturday. A game he was done essentially playing in by halftime, where he had set those rookie records by halftime. What if the Browns score points? And Stroud has to continue playing offense. Aren't we to expect that the way the Texans were moving the football would have continued? And is that 177-yard play enough to drop his grade, where that throw that Jordan Love had to that tight end who was wide open and had to stop and turn around and then take it into the end zone, like, where, how is that not the same exact kind of play? So these are things to keep in mind. I think Pro Football Focus is useful to an extent, but the way that they talk down to people and the way that they at least come across as knowing better than everybody else, that's why no one's ever going to take their side, and why I'm going to go team jock here and high five J.J. Watt, who had another drive-by on Pro Football Focus during this interview.
I mean, I've literally sat in a meeting room with coaches and put the grades side by side from a coach's grade and from the PFF grade. I've done it, and it's not even remotely close. So, like, don't sit here and tell me, like, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know how all this works. Like, yeah. I do. I've literally done it. I've sat in that room and done it with coaches in the National Football League. So take your and shovel it somewhere else, because I'm not dealing with it.
Very Wisconsin saying.
Take your bleep and shovel it somewhere else.
Yeah, that feels like a very... And also the way he said, take that bleep and shovel it somewhere else, pal.
Pal, buddy.
Yeah.
Guy. Yeah, that does sound borderline Canadian, like Terrence and Phillip in South Park. Shoveling poop... So who shovels poop? Like zookeepers?
Farmers.
I suppose you do it in your own way if you have a doggo. A little fur baby.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a big dog probably, but yes, you could use a shovel.
If you have a cat in your litter box, like there's a little pooper scooper. Because you gotta like clean the litter box so that your kitty's bum bum is nice and clean when coming out of it. And it's just not tracking like big chunks of like clay from the litter box.
It's just funny we went from zookeeper, farmer, big dog to
cats.
Oh, your kitty cat. Meow. You might get on your knees and use a little shovel to fish out the poopy.
I don't get on my knees for that. No, this my litter box is set up in a way where whenever I'm dropping.
Wait, your litter box or your
cat's? My litter box? Yes, okay. I have a litter box. I'm a furry, and I can't believe that Gal Media doesn't have a litter box for me in the bathroom. It's absolutely ridiculous. No, my setup is where the bathroom where I go twosies in. I got two bathrooms in my condo. Shout out
what?
To me. I know, pretty sick. The bathroom nice. I go twosies in, the litter box is right there. So when I'm dropping the kids off, I'm also scooping the cat stuff, putting it in a bag, and then boom, two turds taken care of with one sit and one you know what.
So PFF grades, ultimately, I don't care. This, as it went on, so when we first saw it, because I think we saw it yesterday during the show or maybe before the show, that the Jordan Love had like a 93 and CJ Stroud at 77 or whatever. And at first we were like, well, that's weird. Like that seems wrong. I don't know what's going on here. As it progressed throughout the day, this is where Texans fans kind of became they started fighting the James Harden MVP wars in my mind.
Yeah, good point.
Where it's like, what do we care? This is freaking playoffs, dude. Like, why do we care about one website's grade?
We're on to Baltimore.
What?
Saturday
cares?
Is the biggest game of the season, and today is the greatest day of your life, and you're spending it arguing with a bunch of nerds on Pro Football Focus. Listen, that publicity is kind of good for them. That's how they get that publicity. That's how they get the engagement, the retweets, and all of that. And yeah, you're right, Sean. Focusing on Pro Football Focus when there's a playoff game to be played, I gotta say, you're not focused enough. You're not focused enough.
As a fan, you need all eyes on the Ravens. Why are we looking back to the
right?
If a single Texans fan sat back and rewatched the Browns game that they weren't planning on rewatching just to fire off some tweets to Pro Football Focus, like what? Like do something better.
Do something better.
Do something better with your time.
Yeah.
Don't be Rockets fans. All right. In all things, actually, that should just be
just don't go
things,
on
don't
Twitter. It's
fans.
Terrible. It's terrible.
Just to argue with some Irish guy. Come on.
Yes.
With a calculator.
That's the funniest part. Again, they work hard. I'm not diminishing the work that they do. But you're arguing with an Irish man covering football. No offense, not to be xenophobic, but that guy, Sian Fahey, GTFO, born in the USA. I was born in the USA. And you weren't. Stop talking about us. I just see what I just did to this cup. Yeah, that's what I think of Irish people's takes on the NFL.
Now, Irish people are perfectly capable individuals, but just in the field of football, take it a little less seriously. We invented this game.
How about you take a walk outside like I did 1.1 miles to work?
Developed plantar fasciitis.
It did, but we're still here. We're still here. Did the show. Went to the gym.
Shovel it somewhere else, all right?
That's shovel all that bleep
that's all
elsewhere.
Saying, Thomas Shelby.
Yeah. Thomas Shelby.
It's the only Irish guy I could think of.
He's not even Irish. He's not Irish.
Oh, you know
show.
What? Killian Murphy
Killian
is Irish.
Killian Murphy's Irish.
The actor is Irish.
Yeah. Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Speaking of weird sayings, we got to play a saying from some Baltimore Raven player before Texans and Ravens on Saturday. Is this a real saying? Also, I got to tell you about my friends at MyBookie, MyBookie.ag. First off, promo code BET975. You're going to get an awesome deposit bonus as soon as you sign up. MyBookie.ag, promo code BET975. I'm shocked that the line for Texans Ravens at MyBookie.ag has actually, once again, gone more in favor for Baltimore. Maybe this has to do with Will Anderson. Maybe this has to do with Jonathan Greenard. The Ravens are now 9.5-point favorites. I believe it started off at 9. Maybe it was 9.5, but the line is at 9.5. I'm sorry, they're covering that. Injuries or not, I feel very confident saying the Texans will cover. And that is still a large spread, but maybe you think that the Vegas people know what they're talking about. Maybe they do. So you go to mybookie.ag, you enter promo code BET975. You can bet on that game. You can bet on any of this weekend's playoff action, all four games, and anything. Hockey, basketball, college basketball. Everything is there. The Australian Open, for God's sakes. Everything's there. MyBookie.ag, promo code BET975. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only with MyBookie.ag.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Everyone loves our chicken pot pie.
Chicken pot, chicken pot, chicken pot pie.
Back to the Paul Gallant Show, coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Pressure, hell, I don't feel pressure at all, but some do say pressure bursts pipes and make diamonds. And hey, you know, I know a lot of guys in there like diamonds, so I would say we're in the diamond making business at the end of the day.
That's Roquan Smith, Ravens linebacker, before Texans Ravens on Saturday. Okay, couple of things here. Pressure does burst pipes. Pressure does make diamonds. But, I mean, there's a in-between process with the diamonds and big diamond. And generally it involves slavery. So, Roquan Smith, you're in the diamond industry? Oh. What are you guys doing over on that continent? Huh. Gotta wonder. I didn't know that the saying was pressure bursts pipes and make diamonds. I thought it was pressure makes diamonds.
Yeah, that's like the director's cut of that saying.
You're right. It's the Snyder cut. It's like way too much.
A little bit of prequel to that.
It's in black and white. Diamonds. It's slow motion. There's some weird musical score in the background for no reason at all, like with all of Zack Snyder's way over serious stuff that everyone loves to kiss the ass of. Sorry, Zack Snyder is very overrated. The Snyder cut, like, I don't know, maybe there's a reason that everyone universally panned all DC movies and it was Zack Snyder to begin with. But anyway, to bring it back, at the very end, we're in the diamond making business. That was a pretty smooth way to finish that line up. But are they overlooking the Houston Texans by thinking about diamonds, not just one, but 2 weeks ahead of a potential Super Bowl?
Yeah, true.
There's another chip. Bulletin board. Add it. Add it, baby. Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. We do have to continue our Astros countdown. How many days away are we? Let's check it out.
It's always Astros time in Houston. Are you ready to play?
A lot of people were wondering what it was going to be like if the Astros didn't win the division. I guess we'll never know.
We're counting you down to the Astros pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training in West Palm Beach.
25 days away. So, Jose Cruz?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Really quick Astros update. Yesterday we talked about how Kendall Graveman's out for the year, and it might provide an impetus for the Astros to spend big money on Hector Neris to pay him a little bit more. They might be in that situation just given how many innings, over 200, they're missing from last year. Dana Brown said they're going to go with some internal options. Well, per Hector Gomez, Hector Neris is seeking a 3-year, $50 million deal, and the Yankees are showing a lot of interest in him. I think the Rangers were as well. $50 million over three? Oh, that's worse than the Montero contract.
I think, isn't that basically, wasn't Montero like in the 50 or 40, high 40s? I forgot where Montero was, but yeah, it's another like, ooh.
Montero's 3 for 30-something, I believe, and yeah, this is way more. And if you didn't give the Montero contract out, you could give it. Honestly, I would feel more comfortable in Hector Neris being able to do this again, because Neris seems to be at his best in the most difficult of spots, and he's clearly very enigmatic and fun. But it is a one-year sample size of him being lights out last year versus his entire career, which is sort of the same situation that Rafael Montero had.
It's also a lot of Hector Neris loading up the bases himself and getting himself out of it. Where if a couple, not to go all PFF, but if a couple plays go differently, his ERA is like 7.
Yeah, 100%. But he did clean up those messes. And the difference, Montero was bad before he came to Houston. And anyone who listened to me in Seattle, like, I whined about Montero whenever we talked about the Mariners. I was like, and when they traded him as part of the Kendall Graveman trade, I was like, thank God. Thank God. He gone. Good. You know? And, of course, the Astros got him. He had the one good year. He definitely did. But
yeah,
like,
and perfectly timed good year to win a World Series.
And I want to say this. I'm happy he got paid for him, but not for the Astros. Yeah. Like, that's how I'm always happy. If a guy gets paid, good for you. I hope I get paid someday.
I was going to say, it's my dream to be ridiculously overpaid.
Everyone wants to be ridiculously overpaid. Don't hold it against them. Hold it against the person that made it happen and didn't make it happen to you. You know?
Jeff Bagwell.
F the bosses, as they always say, except for Mr. Gow, who is the man.
Yes, except for Mr. Gow.
All right, exactly. All right, we're going to wrap things up next by talking about the dead. Should you speak ill of the dead? I don't know. I think this moment was pretty funny. Paul Gallant Show, stick around.
ESPN 97.5 on YouTube. Dog Show.
God loves a terrier.
Welcome back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's your host, former Shorecrest Preparatory All-District Safety, Paul Gallant.
Super Bowl champion Spencer Tillman recognizing another legend of the game. Sean Mapes shaking his head. A text about Hector Neris, and he runs up to batters after strikeouts. I mean, that's a bonus in my opinion. I want to have more reasons to talk about baseball games during the regular season that have nothing to do with actually what took place during the game. Like, I don't care about the X's and O's of the game. I don't care about the lineup stuff. If you've been listening to me long enough, you know I'm a very casual baseball fan, in quotation marks. And seeing Hector Neris get up in Julio Rodriguez's face was my favorite moment of the past year, seeing as the Astros did not advance to a World Series or win a World Series, which was very controversial with people in Seattle. But I was like, listen, I'm from... not really, but I've lived in Texas 10 of the last 12 years, and there's definitely a cultural gap between those living in the Pacific Northwest who are a little bit more sensitive to terms that could be interpreted as homophobic and Latin American culture, which has a massive foothold here in Houston. So people are going to interpret that moment differently. But all I'm going to say is that we got to talk about something for a couple of days that was kind of stupid, but pretty funny. And yeah. I like that Hector Neris gets that excited about a regular season baseball game.
Yeah, yeah. I want a absolutely jacked up, fired up reliever in my bullpen. I don't care who it is. I don't even care what inning it is. Well, Hector Neris most of the time pitched the sixth or the seventh inning. It doesn't even have to be the closer. That just goes up there and is an absolute insane person.
Yeah.
Just give me that.
That's fun.
That's on my checklist for every baseball team. It's like, do they have a guy who throws 100 miles per hour in the sixth inning that is clinically insane and you think is like taking shots of caffeine between pitches? Like, yeah okay.
Yeah, he's doing like Baker Mayfield, a couple smelling salts on the way out of the bullpen. I like that.
Doing like a elaborate celebration after he gets out of the inning where he's like clapping and making a hand motion and shouting.
Or maybe he has some stupid trumpet playing as he comes out of the bullpen only to tear his ACL. Yeah, like that. That's something I want. I want
you
more.
You want him to tear his ACL?
That's Edwin Diaz I'm talking about.
But you want a guy to tear his ACL?
No, I don't want that. I'm just saying it happened. Maybe he was a little too cocky.
Well, no, it was because they're celebrating
the World Baseball Classic. So there wasn't a trombone or a trumpet. Someone's got to have the trombone coming out of the bullpen.
Lights flickering. Like it's Ryan Presley.
People in the crowd are like, whoop that trick! Whoop that trick!
They're playing air trombone, and it gives us a lot of funny gifts. That's a hand motion. We talked about hand motions earlier.
Oh, that would be amazing. All right, hey, no easy way to transition into this, but I'm going to try to do what every single broadcast has to do. Not garbage time yet, Sean. We got to touch on something that should not have tickled my funny bone last night, but it did. So this is actually a really sad story. The Warriors postponed their game against the Dallas Mavericks after the death of their assistant coach, Dejan Milojevic. He was just 46. Truly awful to see that somebody passed away at such a young age. It's always awkward to know what to say after someone passes away, whether you actually know the person. One of my favorite scenes in Game of Thrones is the awkwardness of... how am I forgetting it? The guy from Highgarden with his fancy hair goes up... How are we forgetting his... Tyrell.
The homosexual
one? Loras Tyrell, yes.
The one Hector Nerys might have some words about?
Loras Tyrell goes up to, I believe, Cersei Lannister after Tywin Lannister, spoiler alert, passes away, and just keeps on saying, like, he was a force, and just a force to be reckoned with, and a force at the funeral. No one knows what to say when somebody dies. They don't know. And broadcasters generally don't know what to say when it happens. And this should not have tickled me, but last night, watching the Rockets broadcast on Space City Home Network, the continued discussion of the passing of Dejan Milojevic on the Space City Home Network, specifically Ryan Hollins, who just kept the conversation going. It just made me laugh because it was a little awkward.
Golly, we just can't imagine, you know, being at a team meal and going through that and then hearing that news in season, man.
Just 46 years of age, very young. As Hart runs it up and in, tying it up to 25.
Some things are just much, much bigger than basketball, man. Play this game and enjoy it while you can and take care of your loved ones.
Yeah, never take a day for granted, that's for sure.
Again, Rockets bringing some good energy off the bench here.
She kind of naturally transitioned back into it, and it felt like Ryan Hollins felt uncomfortable with the silence and just started talking a little bit more. It's an awkward place to be. I'm glad that I don't have to do that on a professional basis. But while we're talking about those who have passed and how we talk about them, let's move into garbage time, because this clip of a player talking about another dead player had me in stitches last night.
I'm only happy when
it's garbage, and then I start eating garbage.
If there's one guy up here who knows about total garbage,
garbage,
it's this guy. It's garbage time with Paul Gallant. Let's go.
You'd think I would get mad by this. No, I think this is hilarious. So, Udonis Haslam has a podcast. And on an episode of this podcast, Sean, who was he talking with here?
I think
Mike Miller is one of the co-hosts.
Mike Miller is the co-host. It's a very heat culture podcast. Oh, it was with Bam Adebayo.
Bam Adebayo.
This is a few weeks ago. The first clip is from a few weeks ago.
Right.
I think... Yeah.
It was a few weeks ago, and it was a very controversial one, especially yes. In Boston. But I think it's hilarious. It was Udonis Haslam talking, Bam Adebayo talking about an experience he had with Udonis Haslam in Boston.
We play in Boston, so you know his feel on that. Yeah. So, dog, we in the huddle, and you know, Cap come in there, he give his pregame speech. And you know they retire like Bill Russell's jersey for everybody in the league. So... they got six in our Raptors.
And he in his pregame speech, like,
tell me when you gonna see a Miami Heat jersey hang in a Boston.
Bill Russell too. I said, bro, this man dead, OG.
I had to repent that. I love man, Bill. Man. No Bill disrespect Russell. To Bill. I love Bill. He just caught that straight. Man, no disrespect. I love Bill. And
man
he
caught it straight. He's 6 feet
by.
Under, man.
But will you ever see a Miami Heat jersey never, hanging in Boston never, Raptors? Never.
Man,
respect I would, Bill Russell. I love it. Why the fuck he got to hang in here? Did that come out the people mouth to us when we playing there?
Man, listen.
I might not take back what I said. Now that I think about it, the way they the shit that they say to
first
us.
First of all, Bill had
there,
to go through it.
Yeah, okay, cool.
It's a great point because the Dolphins, Dan Marino, his number is retired for the Miami Heat. In addition to Bill Russell, That would annoy me too. I think that's a great point by Udonis Haslam. People wanted him to apologize, and he kind of apologized on a most recent episode of said podcast.
If you see the patch on here, there's a number six.
Yep.
Everybody understands what that number six goes for. Yeah,
so everyone needs to pump the brakes
a little bit. Let me talk on this one time. Just right. 1 second.
Talk,
so
preach.
First, as a black man, mm-hmm. I understand what Bill Russell has done for us. Aside from basketball, mm-hmm. what he's done as a black man just for us to move forward in life.
Yep.
I have a lot of respect. Love what he's done on the basketball court as well. Being a champion. I'm all about winning.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So if I apologize to anybody, it'd be Bill Russell's family.
There you go.
The Boston people, y'all got a better chance of wrestling the alligator. I'm not apologizing to you motherfuckers for nothing.
But so, Bill Russell's family.
But Bill Russell's family, right. I will apologize because that might have came off insensitive in the heat of the moment.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But I got a lot of love and a lot of respect for Bill Russell. So as a man, if I came off wrong, I apologize. You Boston motherfuckers, fuck you.
I'm not going to lie. I love Udonis Haslam now.
This is a perfect apology.
It's great.
It's literally the perfect apology.
And Celtics fans should love that he said that. Yeah, I would be pissed off too if the Patriots had to retire Peyton Manning's number. That would suck.
Now, it is a little bit different because
Peyton Manning's alive and Bill Russell's dead.
And
Bill Russell went through a lot of stuff back in the day, so he's also sort of a civil rights figure too.
I know Udonis Haslam was an older NBA player when he played. Bill Russell retired in like 1970. Like what? It's such like ancient history. Like relatively speaking, and the Miami Heat didn't exist when Bill Russell played.
Can I retire his number though? Yeah, that the Heat's retired number is hilarious.
It'd be,
it's like
yeah.
him and it's like Dan Marino and Alonzo Mourning and Bill Russell.
It'd be like if
not even Michael Jordan. Unless they have.
No, you can wear 23, but I think like there's a like some sort of honoring of Michael Jordan in the Heat arena.
We're done. Big thanks to Sean Mapes. Big thanks to our Stectors and our Twitchers. Remember, pressure bursts pipes and it makes diamonds. We'll be back at it tomorrow at 10. Connor and Beard are up next. So long. Farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful Thursday. Peace.
He looks very classless.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Hear your family.
Look at our family now.